So we've reached the end of recording the Business Jazz podcast. And I was just very much influenced by poor old Roger across the table. I won't actually reveal what he said, but Roger, how did the podcast go this week for you?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I liked the fact that we were able to bring Chris Brogan in. Chris has started doing an audio version of his newsletter. In fact, you'd almost say he started doing a redacted text version of his new podcast.
Redacted text? I mean, my God, you're talking about a black marker in which you cross out stuff.
Well, he has to make editing decisions as to what goes in I'm losing it. Anyway, but yeah. I liked, because we had wanted to do this, we had wanted to incorporate his voice last week, and we just couldn't figure it out, and then you came up with a great idea, which fits with the podcast. Is basically, we take Chris's audio recording, we set it running at a random point, and we somehow weave that into the conversation. I think that is the way to do it.
We just played it off the iPad.
We played it off the iPad.
But we actually did an experiment to see which would give us a louder sound, the MacBook Pro or the iPad. And for some weird, weird reason that I don't understand, we got a louder sound out of the iPad.
We did. We did. So, well done, iPad. I gave our producer a slight headache in that to get the audio well recorded, I took my lapel mic off on several occasions, and I know there's going to be that rustling as I do it. But fortunately, we record on two different channels, I think. So we
and what's wrong with a bit of rustling? I mean, I don't understand you audio guys, your technicians, you know.
You'll stand out in a howling gale, barely audible, because the wind is going...
Yeah, this is true. I produce some awful dribble. I also coughed in the middle of that.
We can deal with that, because we're recording on two different channels. So your cough will appear on my microphone, but your microphone can be cut out, so it will be less on mine than in yours. Also, I think neither of us was talking at the time.
And that's good, is it?
Well, then it can be cut out completely. It's as if it never happened.
Do you know, I have started learning how to do a bit of audio editing, you know. I have actually looked at GarageBand. I have actually put a piece of audio into GarageBand and got a knife and cut it in two.
It's easy, isn't it?
Well, that part is. Doing anything with it is another story. Right.
Garage,
what did you think of the bit of poetry this week?
I was following you reading Ithaca, showed my ignorance of where Ithaca is, but I was watching you reading it, and I saw this huge word coming up, and I thought, well, I'd like to know what that word is, and you stopped because you saw the word coming up as well, and... what on earth is that word? It's in the third line of the poem.
Well, it's actually from Odysseus, right?
Lystragonians.
So these are two characters in the Lystragonians and the Cyclops. Now you know about the Cyclops,
yes,
don't you
Cyclops,
already?
Right. Cyclops,
so I confess that I do not remember my Odysseus well enough, but I am absolutely certain that the wanderings of Odysseus around the Mediterranean after the fall of Troy, before he got back to his abandoned wife back at home, who was entirely surrounded by suitors, Penelope was desperately trying to survive the fact that they were all trying to rip her off and take her money. Do you remember? You know the whole the Odysseus story.
Not
it's the
one.
Most... Oh, it's phenomenal. There's nothing like the Iliad and the Odysseus. I mean, basically, you need a holiday, Roger, overall. You need to go on a holiday, right? Go to some Greek island, take with you, I suggest you take them in English because your Greek wouldn't be good enough, but go and take the Iliad and the Odyssey with you, right? Follow them, and you'll be back a new man, I guarantee you. Don't come back until you have got your way. Have you ever tried the Iliad?
No. I want to go on a grand, you know, the grand European tour that used to be done in the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries.
Yes.
That's what I want to do.
The kind of Eurorail experience in the 20th century, yes?
No. I would think it would be the furthest thing away from the Eurorail experience.
Okay, you want to do the grand tour. You
want to go.
You want to go to the Biennale in Venice, or what do you call that wonderful hotel in Venice that we can't afford to go to that costs...
Well, that could be any hotel. You're talking about me.
I know, a seriously wonderful place to go into, right?
But to do it for your cultural edification, and as you say, to take along with you the Iliad and to read...
And you could hear about Poseidon. I quote you from Ithaca. You know, one of the most I was actually, I just did it on the fly, because this wonderful man, well, he's wonderful because he's so appreciative of Business Jazz Podcast. Over there in upstate New York or somewhere in New York, maybe Fireman Rich will be able to tell us exactly. Yeah. No, I'm not talking about Fireman Rich. Okay. I'm talking about Charles Taggart. Charles Taggart over there comes from Ithaca. So last night I went and looked up to see where is this guy coming from. And it turns out that he's from Ithaca. And the backstory, which you can find on Wikipedia for this place in New York, is just phenomenal. And I remember this great, great poem. It is an absolutely... I mean, it's by Constantine, and I can never, ever manage to remember that. It's Cavafy. C-A-V-A-F-Y. I first came across the poem Ithaca by Constantine P. Cavafy in a book called My Kleinian Home by somebody who I've forgotten right now. And it was an introduction to a book about therapy, three different types of psychoanalysis, Freudian, Jungian, and Kleinian. Ninnie Herman was the author of the book. And this was the foreword in the book, and it was an incredible poem. Anyway, back to the point here, Roger. What else did you think about the podcast this week?
I enjoyed doing it.
You said that last time.
Well, you know, a book, that's important, because one day I'm going to turn around to you and I might say, I didn't enjoy that, Paul. I'm not doing it again.
I'm actually taking it for granted. You're quite right to pull me up on that. I'm actually rather taking it for granted that it is, of course it's enjoyable, but you're quite right. It doesn't have to be enjoyable. It could be very hard work.
It could be.
It could be a real pain in the neck.
But it's not, and I enjoy it, and I think the information was interesting. It was a different kind of podcast, simply because we referred to the email only in passing, and we let Chris do his own kind of introduction, because we let him talk, and that was the first time, and I liked the way that worked.
Was it okay to abandon the content of the email? We didn't even talk about that beforehand, and I just felt suddenly in the middle of the podcast, let's not bother with the content. Let's just talk about whether Brogan has a voice or not.
Well, I think so, because first of all, variety. It's good for that variety. Importantly, of course, if anybody wants to get the email, they can. The email is there. It's not. They can listen to Chris's audio version if they want it. There's no point us rehashing verbatim what Chris says. So I think listeners...
I think there was something authentic about it, though, because it actually was exactly what I felt like saying at the time. And it obviously was something you were quite comfortable with, because you could always say, no, there's 3 points in this email I want to discuss. And you might have felt like that.
Well, I think first of all, what makes people attractive is spontaneity and honest and genuine, authentic thoughts, how they feel. Rather than sort of dressing it up and maybe not saying exactly what they feel, I mean, you can get that from anybody. So if you suddenly have this, I'm really passionate about this, this really excites me, this is fantastic, I want to talk about this, well, why not?
I'm remembering Jane Boyd and the way she did 45 conversations.
The
incredible way in which she started talking with Mark Rock. She rings Mark Rock up at what is about 6 o'clock in the morning, half six in the morning, in Mark Rock's house. And he's downstairs and his wife and children are upstairs. And, no other, podcaster, if you like, or conversationalist would have started the way Jane Boyd did it. You know, she just literally started with curiosity about how Mark was talking in the front room of his house and the children were upstairs. And that became, that is to me, the most memorable part of that 45 conversation with Mark Rock.
Mm.
If you like to do the fire, absolutely, we're just here chatting after recording. And
thank you.
You can make as much noise as you like and we'd be very happy.
Thank you.
But I'm just thinking that whole way of, you start a conversation without an agenda. I don't have my 9 pre-recorded, pre-rehearsed questions.
No. No. Of course, it's going to go horrendously wrong one day.
Someday it'll collapse. But then so what? You'll end up going up your own arse, kind of talking about stuff that, you know, God, you know, we did get stuck doing that.
But if that happens, it happens, and it certainly didn't happen today. And what are your thoughts? How did you feel?
Oh, I thought it was a good experiment. I really did. I felt it was a bit like, let's experiment with seeing, can we bring Chris Brogan's voice in, so there are three of us here at the table. I thought that was actually well worth doing. I mean, he was really good enough to send us the MP3 file last week of what he was going to be putting out, and I felt very privileged and grateful. And if Chris ever listens to this, I want to say genuinely, mate, thanks a million for doing that.
But isn't that a great collaboration? Because he was the one, we didn't actually ask for this. He is the one who contacted us. He reached out to us saying, guys, I'm going to be doing this in future. Whatever you want to use, if it's useful to you, take it. You know, and he did this before he launched the first one. So he does this great thing of reaching out and trying to work with you and bring you into his community and make you feel...
What's that phrase?
Feel...
He walks the talk, right? He does actually do that. Yeah.
He makes you... He actively goes out of his way to make you feel that he cares.
I have to... Just on a completely different note, I was bothered this week by the lack of the fire. I was bothered about the fact that I feel cold in here, and I feel a little bit less loved than I am in the week when the fire is going, I have to admit.
Same, and it's not...
So I think that it's like, you know, I think we persevere through adversity to a certain extent, Roger. I have to say, you know, it wasn't as warm an experience this week. Mm. Now, there may be a certain coldness in my voice during the podcast when it comes up on air. Do you think that'll be the case?
No.
Are you sure?
I don't know. It won't be your voice. It'll be the fire, the crackling fire, when it can be heard, does add something to the atmosphere, but you can't always hear it. So, but I enjoy the fire. It's the glow. It's the warmth. It's the sense of feeling at home and having a place where the podcast belongs. And also for the listener, this almost romantic notion that we're in a castle here in the south of Ireland, by fireside. Having a chat. Fireside chat.
Who? Was that Roosevelt who did the fireside chats? Was it Roosevelt who started the fireside chats in the 1930s during the Depression in America?
That's a good question. I think you're right.
I mean, did Richard Nixon try to ape Roosevelt with a disastrous results later on?
I wouldn't know. I would have been...
You're too young for Nixon. Bloody well, I was in California in summer 68, during the Democratic convention in Chicago that summer, right? I have vivid memories of Huey Newton and the situation on the streets in Chicago in 68.
I would have just ended the world in 1968. Yeah. So there you are. I found out during the week, I thought this was really interesting. You left London the year I arrived in London.
All right. Oh, you arrived in London in 93.
Yes.
All right.
Which I thought was quite funny.
Oh God, it was great to go to London during the week, Roger. I can tell you this much, honestly. I have a couple of regrets. One is I didn't get to see Mark Cotton. He does live in London, doesn't he? No, where does he live? Southeast somewhere.
No.
Not a million miles from Bletchley Park, surely.
He can't be too far away from Bletchley Park because
Does he keep where he lives secret? So therefore we shouldn't even mention it if we know it.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Anyway, he's somewhere in the southeast.
He does. I need to find out his postal address and ask him directly because I have something for him.
All right. Mm. Right.
Just on the whole Ithaca thing, which I can see on your screen there, and my utter ignorance of all things classical, which really is dreadful, considering that I did go to university and I have a degree in anthropology. Isn't it a shame that it seems in the modern education system that the classics are almost been erased? Do you get that sense?
I don't know. I really don't know. I kind of think that, look, the key thing about the classics are that they will survive. You know, educational things will go up and down. I think the Iliad will live forever. You know, I actually think that...
But will it live forever in a dust on a dusty shelf, forgotten in a library somewhere? Or will it be part of our... Because it is part of our cultural heritage. I mean, part of all of our storytelling, you can probably trace back to the Iliad. And but we're not conscious of it anymore. We don't know anymore. We don't know the great story constructs, the great...
I have mixed feelings, you know that. I had a great English teacher, you see, so that is has completely unbalanced me. Because nearly all the other teachers I had at school were dreadful as far as I was concerned, but I had a great English teacher. And I kind of think that school systems, unless they're careful, can kill things off, right? You feel you've done Shakespeare when you've done Shakespeare at school. Consequently, you feel, well, I don't need to read Shakespeare anymore in my life. Right.
Everybody, but what happens is, here's Macbeth, you've read Macbeth, well then you've done Shakespeare. Well, no, actually, yeah. That's not even...
So I don't know, right? I think it's a very, very good question, you know. I mean, what if we turn, if we don't live the classics, in other words, bring the classics into our life, like the Iliad, for example. If you haven't read the Iliad, then you have to find the Iliad in other places. Because, for example, there is nothing more powerful than the anger of Achilles. The absolute way Achilles railed against, you know, Agamemnon over, you know, in it. Or on the death of his friend. Now, you know, the powerful emotions that are in the Iliad are to be found in other places. You can find modern expressions of emotion. The key thing is that I don't know, the key thing, you need to have a bit of everything. You need to experience the ability to translate anger as an emotion into literature and art. Now, you see, you get really overpowered by emotions. And one of the great things about art is that it enables people to sublimate their emotions into an experience where you can then relate to it. Because if you're on the receiving end of extraordinary anger from somebody, the most you can do is defend yourself against it, really. But if you actually have it converted into art, you can then see that all humans are capable of anger. That we all have times that we're angry. And you could even feel empathy with the angry person. Because art gives you an opportunity to put a bit of distance from the self-defense that you do when you come across anger.
Well, that's because it's passed through a filter. Because the art acts as a filter. And it, and what, however, whatever the artist does, they're always going to emphasize certain things over other things. So it's not this torrent of unmitigated, undiluted rage that you could get. It's actually, here is a filter, and over the Guernica, for instance, Guernica painting. Now, that is, you can imagine the emotions that went into that painting. You can imagine the...
Yes.
And while it is a very... I mean, the painting has massive impact, it's not Picasso railing at you straight in your face, because you would not be able to process that information. You would not be able to understand. You wouldn't even be able to understand what he was trying to say to you. Whereas you look at that painting and you can, and it's thoughtful and it's considerate, and you can engage with it in a thoughtful and considerate way, and you can understand.
Yeah. It takes it out of the concrete into the imagination. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's it takes the raw experience, and art enables raw experience to enter the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even at in the most viciously powerful, angry core of King Lear railing against his daughters, it's transformed from that particular play to, you know, my imagination, and it applies to my domestic situation when something goes wrong at home or something like that. Mm. So King Lear is actually helpful to me in dealing with real life back at home today. And okay, we're just flapping around this topic right now, but I think it is actually something. I'd like AJ Lamb to be sitting around talking with us about this.
Oh, that
you
would
know?
Be good, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't that be good fun?
That would be,
because he kind of is such
excellent.
A big Shakespeare bod that he would be able to add. You know, I feel humble to be able to listen to him about Shakespeare.
It would be listening, because I wouldn't dare open my mouth in the presence of somebody who knows so much.
Oh, you wouldn't? Mm. Oh, that's a pity. Well, I'm not inviting him if you're going to be so humbled. We're down to the last 2 seconds, Roger. Happy Christmas, everybody.